going on this week. We're going to talk about some of these same issues that Mike Lane is, only I'm going to have guests, experts, to really go over the issues of the day. And as I said, you're always welcome to call in. So one more thing you should know before we go to a break and come back with the radio show is that we have a very lively blog on the internet. You know what a blog is. A blog is a weblog, right? If you dial in, if you don't want to call in and talk, maybe some people feel better writing rather than calling, you just go to the web, www.radioinsidescoop.com, and give us your views there. People all over the world give us their views on the blog. So we'll be right back with your calls and this station right after this.
Available live via your local radio station and on the internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
Welcome back.
And now from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Today is Monday. Now, usually on Tuesday, we have debates on the issues of the day, but we're being televised right now on Channel 10 in Fairfax, Virginia. So you radio and television listeners can get to know each other, share your views, and also you can share your views with my guest today. He is Mike Lane, becoming a somewhat frequent guest here on the Inside Scoop. He's the president of Intellifant Strategies, Intellifant being a combination of intelligent and elephant. It's his role to give intelligence to Republicans running for public office. There are a lot of issues to talk about today. There are probably two, not just one, but two Supreme Court nominations. There is interesting information coming out about Karl Rove, perhaps, being involved in the one outing a CIA agent to try to take revenge on a political enemy of the president. There is the London bombing and what it tells us about the war on terror, about the future, what we can do, what we should do. And, of course, there's always you. All you have to do is pick up the phone and dial 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255, and you, too, can be part of Debate Monday. So, Mike, welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I appreciate very much you're coming again.
And I appreciate the invitation. It's good to be back, Mark. Thank you.
Let me start with the London bombing, because I think it's something that troubles any person of decency, frankly, in the world. Whenever you have terrorists, and these, there's no question in my mind, are terrorists, killing innocent people for political gain. I think, in fact, I'd say that's the definition of terrorism, killing innocent civilians for political gain. And I think the question arrives, how do we best stop this and what the English response should be? So let me ask you that question first, and I'll give you my own views.
Well, I think there's two answers to it. The first is the short run. And in the short run, you can only stop it with better intelligence work, better police work, and doing what you can to stop it before it starts. Obviously, in an open society such as London or New York or Washington, D.C., or any other city in the Western world, we have certain freedoms that we come and go, particularly on mass transit. We come and go, and there's no way that we're going to be able to stop this 100% of the time. The only way of diminishing it and minimizing it is by having better intelligence to know when it's going to happen, penetrate the cells of these terrorist organizations so that we don't predict, but we have first-hand information as to when it's going to happen. In the longer run, of course, we need to be successful in the war on terror. That is what's going to bring peace to the world. While we still have terrorists out there, people who are committed to destroying our way of life just because we are a free and open society, it's going to be there.
Well, Mike, I agree with you certainly on the short run that that's something we need to do. We need to penetrate intelligence. In fact, I think both Republicans and Democrats have been lax in the human intelligence necessary all over the world to prevent terrorist attacks. But in the longer run, you know, I think the way we're fighting a war on terror has led to increased terrorism. And let me tell you why I think that. There's two reasons. One, we're going after the wrong guys. The people who attacked in London are Al-Qaeda operatives, and we have withdrawn from the primary centers of Al-Qaeda operatives, Pakistan and Afghanistan. We have withdrawn troops and put them in a war in Iraq that I don't think does anything. I know you may well disagree, but does anything on the war on terror. In fact, I think the war in Iraq makes it worse. So in my mind, not only are we not fighting the guys we should fight, we're fighting guys we shouldn't fight, and in doing so, we're inflaming Arab populace who sees us attacking a country that never attacked us, and it becomes a fertile ground. We're actually creating more terrorists. I realize Al-Qaeda is going to try to get us no matter what, but I'm concerned that ordinary or somewhat mistrusting Arab people, seeing what we've done in Iraq, will join the ranks of Al-Qaeda, actually swell it. So we're going after the wrong guys, and as far as I'm concerned, we're making more people who wouldn't ordinarily be terrorists join the cause. What
well,
do you say?
The good news is we started off with a topic where we're going to disagree, so we'll have a little bit of fun with this one. The first thing is we don't know who actually committed the act of terrorism in London. It's a new group called Al-Qaeda in Europe that has claimed credit for it. Everyone that I've seen from the intelligence community that's been a talking head over the last several days has indicated we don't know who these people are. We've never heard of them before. There have been competing theories that they are British citizens who happen to be devotees of Al-Qaeda. There are other theories that the mastermind of the Spanish train bombings somehow went to London and organized the bombings of the London Underground. There are more theories that some people went to Afghanistan or other Al-Qaeda camps to train and then were circulated back. And then yet another one is that they've been sleeper cells in London for many years.
But there's
we just don't know who they are.
Is there anyone that has a theory that they're from Saddam Hussein or the Saddam Hussein loyalists? I don't think anyone thinks that.
Well, I don't think anybody thinks that.
Okay. But that's sort of my point. No one thinks these people are Saddam Hussein loyalists, and yet we have more than 100,000 troops still in Iraq. In my mind, it's going to be a Vietnam quagmire. Dick Cheney's saying they're in the last throes, while Don Rumsfeld says we'll be there at least a dozen years, 12 years. How does this help us? And I know we got a little bit of time. So you're going to have to give me the 30-second answer of how this helps us in the war on terror, and then we'll come back.
Well, we're fighting terrorism wherever we find it. We'll fight it in New York City. We'll fight it in Washington, D.C. We'll fight it in London. We'll fight it in Baghdad. And we'll fight it in Kabul. And wherever we find terror, that's where we're going.
And in my view, we're not going to terror right now. We're going in Iraq. We got some calls for you, too. We'll be back with your calls right after these messages.
If you...
from Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Today is Debate Monday. Usually we do this on Tuesday, but why not Monday? Today is Debate Monday. I'm discussing the issues of the day with someone who disagrees with me on most things, but is an agreeable person nonetheless. His name is Mike Lane. He's the president of Intellifence Strategies. He provides intelligence to Republican officials to get them elected. And he and I definitely disagree on the war in Iraq. I think it increases terrorism. He thinks it decreases terrorism. But I want to hear from our caller, Kevin from McLean, Virginia. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I worked with the intelligence community back in the Carter days and have had some experience in this area. There is very little doubt that the war in Iraq at this point is a battle against terrorism. There is very little doubt that at the beginning it was not. There is no linkage between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. There is, however, an absolute war going on in the streets of Fallujah, in the streets of Iraq, between us and between al-Qaeda. They have made this their war. They have made this their war, and that is where we will battle them.
Well,
better
Kevin,
in the streets of Fallujah than in the streets of New York.
Well, Kevin, let me ask you this. I certainly think there are now, I agree with a lot of what you say, but not completely. I do think there are now al-Qaeda operatives in Iraq. They weren't there, as you point out, when we began this war. They are there now. But do you think that all of the insurgent attacks against the United States are based on support for al-Qaeda's agenda, or do you think that some of those attacks are by Iraqis that are nationalist and simply want to control their own country?
Well, in my opinion, those who continue from the Iraqi regime of Saddam Hussein, who would like to see their power returned to their hands, that does not necessarily represent the voice of the Iraqi people. It represents the voice of the Saddam Hussein people who have been taken out of power.
I understand that, but the statistics I've seen, I'm going to give Mike a chance to respond too. The statistics I've seen are that 90% of the insurgents in Iraq, and of course you can always argue about how you gather the statistics, so maybe it's 85 and maybe it's 95, but 90% are Iraqi nationals. And I don't dispute that the foreign terrorists are almost certainly, you know, people up to no good, al-Qaeda, so forth, that are causing trouble, just as Afghanistan was the place where all the Arabs came together against the Soviet Union. Now Iraq has become the battleground for Arabs who are fighting for their nationalist freedom. But I guess my question is, if 90% are Iraqis, do you think these are all Saddam Hussein loyalists? In my view, that there's got to be some people out there, and I want to know if you disagree with me, Kevin, then let's see if Mike disagrees with me. There's got to be some Iraqis out there that don't like al-Qaeda, don't like Saddam Hussein, and don't like us, and simply want to control their own country, and so some of them are joining with, perhaps, al-Qaeda or Saddam Hussein or their own groups, and attacking and killing U.S. troops. Do you think that's right? Do you think I'm wrong there, Kevin?
Sure. Let me be very brief. I think 19 terrorists brought about 9/11. There were 19 of them that brought about the terror that struck the United States and killed thousands of U.S. and international citizens on our soil. I think that comparable numbers of terrorists, as well as Iraqi nationalists, are probably bringing about the same results. We don't know how many people are behind one bombing. We do know how many bodies are left behind. I think the name of the game is not whether or not we should be in Iraq, because we are there. I think al-Qaeda is definitely there. I think that Saddam Hussein's troops and those who were his loyalists remain active. And I think it's, you know, we're talking, you know, let's not talk percentages, let's talk numbers.
But you also agree there's a third group of people who aren't in al-Qaeda, aren't in Saddam Hussein, and just want us out.
Sure, they very well may be, and they are most likely the disenfranchised, the people who were in between the rock and the hard place from the beginning.
Kevin, you want to hang on with me?
Absolutely.
I want to let Mike address your question as well, because my view is, taking on what Kevin said, and we agree, I think, on many things, mm-hmm. is that if we were to leave Iraq, and I am a proponent of leaving, not get out tomorrow, but over, let's say, the course of this year, drawing down our troops to 10% of what they are to eventually leave, that third group, that nationalist group, will not be fighting us, will not be killing our soldiers, and if we draw down our troops, and, you know, if al-Qaeda attacks us, we can still attack al-Qaeda wherever on the globe,
right.
Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Iraq, anywhere else, but that we would decrease the attacks on our soldiers. What's your view?
Well, Kevin really has outlined this fairly accurately. Thank you for your call, by the way, Kevin. It's very informative, and I find myself agreeing with almost everything you said. The insurgency has been estimated at a lot of different numbers, but I think the number that most people are going to throw their hats on at this point is about 16,000 insurgents.
Now, it keeps growing, though. That number grows every month.
All right. It's let's even call it 20,000 if you'd like to. I mean, I'm willing to grant you that. Remember, this is in a country of 35 million people, and we've got 20,000 insurgents. Now, taking your number, which I'm willing to, for argument's sake, willing to take, which is 10% are foreign al-Qaeda invaders, agitators, whatever, and 90% are Iraqis, then we've got 18,000 Iraqis out of 35 million people that are there. We see these people trying to disrupt the way of life in Baghdad all the time. They're bombing. They're always attacking either police recruiting stations or army recruiting stations, and yet day after day after day, the Iraqi people line up in tremendous numbers to join the police or to join the security forces or to join the army in an effort to defend their country.
Well, actually, now, they're having recruiting problems, as you know.
Well,
I mean, a lot of people don't want to join the police, and it's not because they don't want to defend their country. It's because they're afraid.
Well, there's every day there's hundreds of people that are lining up exposing themselves to being attacked by a by a savage bomber, a suicide savage, I guess is a good term of art to use, and they still do it because they want to see their country succeed. Now, granted, there may be a few complete nationalists that say, yes, Iraq for Iraqis, and that's it. But I think the vast majority of Iraqis know that we are there to help them get on their feet. And as the president said, we will stand down when the Iraqi security forces are ready to 100% stand up.
And, Mike, that's exactly what they said in Vietnam. We will stand down when they've got Vietnamification, and then we'll leave. My question is,
but
why
are
we there?
Early.
Why can't we declare victory? We've beaten Saddam Hussein and go home. I want to hear more from you. Kevin, do you want to stay on, or should I just thank you for your call?
I'll be more than happy to stay on.
All right, why don't you stay on, but you can call in as well. There's more than one line. 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. And we'll be right back with my question, which is, why not just declare victory and leave right after these messages?
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Whether you're listening on the radio or television, we're glad you have joined us to discuss the issues of the day. My name is Mark Levine. I host the Inside Scoop. I try to bring you all the news from Washington. The government does not want you to know each and every day at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. But we're on television every Monday. We're glad to have you listeners there. My guest is Mike Lane. If I am a Democrat who worked for the House Judiciary Committee, Mike is a Republican who helps get Republicans elected. So we don't agree on much. But what's interesting about the conversation we're having now, along with our guest, Kevin from McLean, Virginia, our caller, is that we don't largely disagree on the facts. I think we can all agree, correct me if I'm wrong, that there are three groups of people attacking U.S. troops in Iraq. There are the al-Qaeda operatives. There are the Saddam Hussein loyalists. And there are what I would suspect is the great majority, we may disagree on that, of people who just want not to be under occupation. They want to control their own affairs. And my question for you, Mike, and I know we disagree on where those facts lead us, but my question for you is this. Saddam Hussein is gone. For whatever reason, he's gone. You know, that's a good thing. None of us were a big fan of Saddam Hussein. I don't think it was worth it. You think it was, but he's gone.
Right.
Now that he's gone, if we don't want permanent military bases there, which unfortunately, I think it's unfortunate that we're building these very large military bases there, if we have no permanent designs on Iraq, why not just leave if the insurgency is as small as you say it is, and let Iraq take control of its own affairs, let the people of Irak, who, by the way, the majority voted for a party that said they wanted U.S. troops out, they changed their mind once they got in government, if the majority of Iraqis want us gone, why shouldn't we leave?
Well, the answer is the Iraqis are not in the short term going to be able to stand up for themselves.
How do you know that?
Well, I used to be in the Marine Corps. I was in the Marine Corps for 3 years active duty and another 17 or 18 in the reserve. I was infantry. I was combat arms. I know what it takes to do this. I know what training's all about. I know how long it takes to get a cohesive unit. Let me take myself out of the picture and tell you about a guy named Charlie Beckwith. You know Charlie. He ran the failed mission to rescue our hostages in Iran back in 1979. When President Carter told him what he wanted, Colonel Beckwith looked at him and said, "That's a great plan, sir. It's only going to take me 6 months to a year to put together the force and the training that's going to be necessary to carry this out." 6 months to a year. Now, the president explained to him he only had 2 weeks to do it, and so he did his best within 2 weeks. But if you take highly motivated, highly trained American Special Forces, Green Berets, Marine Force Recon, Navy SEALs, put them together in one thing for a difficult mission, and he says it's 6 months to a year, how do you expect the Iraqis to stand up and defend their whole nation in 1 year?
I'll
it's not going to happen.
I'll tell you how, Mike, because your analysis is static. You're saying, given the insurgency as it is, can the Iraqis do it alone? My analysis is dynamic, saying that I think if we leave, the insurgency will be weaker, they'll have far fewer people supporting it, and the people themselves will very much fight against the few al-Qaeda operatives and Saddam Hussein loyalists that are still there. I think the people want all occupiers gone, and that includes us, and that includes the insurgents. Kevin, you get one last word. Go for it.
Mark, I appreciate it. Not to put too fine a point on it, I have to agree with two things. One, your point, if the United States is not there, then there would be less reason for there to be the dissent in Iraq. However, if we leave, what we leave behind is what we originally found in Afghanistan, and that is a breeding ground for terrorists. Yeah, it's unfortunate that we have let the genie out of the bottle. There is no doubt about the fact that this was a mistake. However, we are in the middle of this mistake, and we need to end it.
See, I appreciate your call, Kevin. I really do, and it's interesting how he sort of combines agreement with both of us, which is good. That means you're a good thinking person,
He's
Kevin.
A moderate.
Well, he said we were wrong to go in the first place, but now that we're there, we have to stay. Actually, I think that was largely Kerry's argument. My own view is that...
I think Kerry had seven or eight different arguments.
Nah,
but
don't go there. The election is over.
That's another show.
You stole it fair and square in Ohio. We'll talk about that later. Stole it not so fair and square. But, no, I think, though, that to me, it's a lot like Vietnam in the sense that whatever reason we got in, I think it was a mistake to go in, I think it's a mistake to continue. Don Rumsfeld says... We're going to be there for 12 more years.
And I actually think that Secretary Rumsfeld is underestimating the case.
It may take longer than
12 years.
Okay, so my question for you, and we're going to have to take another break, and I know there are lots of callers, and we'll get right to you after the break. Is it worth 25 years of U.S. troops in Iraq dying at the rate of, let's say, 1,000 a year for 25 years and maybe $100 billion a year? Is it worth it?
In this case, it's worth whatever it takes because the cost of failure is too high to pay.
I think the cost of your definition of success is too high. Vietnam, we paid 50,000 lives and never got out.
We cannot turn Iraq over to Al-Qaeda. It simply will create a more dangerous world.
Don't turn it over to Al-Qaeda, folks. Turn it over to the Iraqis. Let them deal with Al-Qaeda. We'll be right back. I got lots of calls. We'll be right back after this.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop, giving you all the news Washington doesn't want you to know. And my guest is Mike Lane. He's arguing from the right, if you will, and me from the left. But as usual, you can say your own views. Just call in 877-528-TALK. We're talking right now about, well, the Terrorist Act in London, whether the war in Iraq contributes to terrorism or cuts down on terrorism. But there's lots of things you can talk about. You can talk about Karl Rove and his role in outing the wife of a CIA agent. Or, in fact, on my blog, I've got an interesting case. Michelle from California writes about the case of Leonard Clark. Leonard Clark is a National Guardsman from Arizona serving in Iraq who was trying to tell radio hosts, people like me, bloggers, that he disapproves of the war in Iraq. It's being badly fought. And his commander ordered him not to talk to the press anymore. And from what my listener, Michelle in California, tells me, he's been arrested. I want to know what you think about, too. But let me go to your calls. Whatever you want to talk about, this is Alice in California. Alice, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yes. Mike, I no longer believe that anyone can defend the Bush administration. They do everything for the very rich and nothing for normal people. They do much harm too many, just out of greed.
Alice, first, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. We certainly encourage everyone to call in and express their views. And if I can address your comments for just a moment, you and I are probably going to disagree for this particular thing. I think the president is dedicated and committed to building an administration that serves all Americans, that serves not only those who are fortunate, but also those who are less fortunate.
What has he done for the less fortunate, Mike?
Well, let's talk about the one that perhaps Alice can most readily relate to or take care of, and that is that he campaigned in his first campaign on providing a prescription benefit from Medicare, and lo and behold, yes, he has provided a prescription benefit, a prescription drug benefit for Medicare.
And isn't it true, Mike, that benefit kicked in for pharmaceutical companies last year and won't kick in for seniors until next year?
It does kick in next year, yes.
Right. Now, how come the pharmaceutical companies, under this wonderful benefit that's supposed to be for seniors, the pharmaceutical companies started receiving government money for this benefit last year, and seniors don't get anything until next year? You don't think there's anything a little fishy about that?
Well, I actually don't think there's anything fishy about it, but the important thing is the president said that he was going to provide a benefit for senior citizens, who, some of whom, unfortunately, were in a position where they needed to make a decision between whether or not they bought their prescription medicine or whether or not they bought the other necessities of life. You know, you talk about whether or not, just one second, Alice, you talk about whether or not the drug companies are acting responsible. Is it a coincidence that in the last several months, most of the major drug companies are now running advertisements promoting their free prescription drugs for those people who otherwise can't afford it, don't have coverage, haven't had any other way to get it?
Drug
we hear them all the time.
The drug companies spend more on advertising than on research. I understand the drug companies want us to feel good about them, but the drug companies also lobbied behind the scenes, and I know you know this, Mike, it's in the prescription drug bill, that not only can we not, as the government of the United States, lobby the drug companies. The drug companies lobbied the administration and the Congress, the government, all the time to give them all our taxpayer money. But the government not only can't lobby the drug companies to lower their prices, they can't band together and say, you know what, for our Medicare, we're going to do what Canada does, what France does. We're going to insist that if you don't give us a lower price, we're going to somewhere else. The governments in Canada and France can bargain, can get the best prices, but not only does that Medicare bill prevent the government from bargaining, it also prevents our seniors from going to Canada, from going to France, from getting the exact same drugs in the exact same bottles. Clearly, that's just a giveaway from taxpayers to the drug companies.
Well, Mark, you really don't want to compare the level of medical care available in Canada with the level
it's
of medical
same
care.
It's the same drugs, Mike.
It's
in the same bottles.
Did
you see the 60 Minutes? They took the bottles and they relabeled them. They took off the Canadian label. They put on the U.S. label, and then they charged four times as much.
If you had a medical problem, would you rather be in the Canadian system or would you rather be here?
If it's the same drugs in the same bottles. You haven't addressed that.
The second thing is the Canadian health minister, I believe it was, announced just earlier last week, since this is Monday, that Canada is not going to be a discount drug house for the United States, and they are going to ban all exports back to the United States. The reimportation of Canada is not going
to
happen.
But I want to thank Alice for her call and just address this issue. When it comes to the exact same drugs in the exact same bottles, where they are literally doing, and there was a wonderful 60 Minutes piece on this, I don't know if you saw it.
I don't watch 60 Minutes. I bet you that surprises you.
I'm sure you don't, but what they do is they take the labels off, and they put American labels on, and they charge three times as much, or they take American labels off, they put European labels on, and they charge one quarter of the rate. When it's the same drugs in the same bottle, the tamper-proof seal isn't removed.
Mm-hmm.
Can you agree with me that American consumers should be able to buy those drugs abroad, which are sometimes a tenth of the price of the American drug?
Where I'll agree with you is that one of the ways we could substantially reduce the cost of prescription drugs in the United States is essentially, and this is not a free market solution, this is a heavy hand of government, there's no need for the amount of marketing dollars that are spent that are amortized in the cost of drugs. We get rid of direct marketing to consumers and let the medical system work the way it's supposed to, and we'll all be able to afford our prescription benefits.
I agree with you, Mike, but you haven't answered my question about the same drugs in the same bottles. The Medicare's prescription drug bill that you just praised prohibits American consumers from buying out of Canada or France or anywhere else countries that are relabeling U.S. drugs from U.S. manufacturers and selling them at a cheaper price. Can you agree with me that the part of the bill that bans that is wrong?
I think the American consumer, medical consumer, ought to be able to have access to the prescription medicines they need at as low a cost as they can possibly get.
So they should be able to buy them from Canada, and the Bush administration is wrong to prohibit that.
I don't think I said that, no.
Well, then what's the difference? Now, I'm going to press you on this because, you know, you're very good, Mike. You give, you know, political advice to people, and you tell them how to say things, but you've just, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you've agreed with me that American consumers should be able to go to Canada and buy the same drugs in the same bottles for a cheaper price. But look, you know the Medicare bill prohibits that. Should the Medicare bill not have prohibited that?
One of the reasons that they're able to get it cheaper in Canada is because the drug companies don't market it that way. They're not allowed to market it because consumers aren't allowed to come up with an idea in Canada that, oh, I need that drug, I'll go see my doctor. They can't even get in to see their doctor in Canada most of the time.
But I want a bottom line. So should American consumers be able to buy the cheaper drugs in Canada, or shouldn't they? What's your view?
If they can get to Canada and buy them, I say have at it.
So they have to cross the border to do it, not on the Internet. That's
You know, I'm not really overly concerned whether they buy it on the Internet.
So do you think it should be legal and the administration's wrong in their bill? I mean, it's okay to disagree with the administration. You don't have to agree with everything they say, Mike.
I don't think it's the all-to-end-all issue, and I wouldn't fall on my sword either way.
All right. I think that's the best admission we're going to get from him. We've got more callers on the line. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. All issues of the day are fine. Agree with me, agree with Mike, disagree with both of us. That's fine by me. We'll be right back after these messages.
The legacy of the great community.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Welcome to Debate Monday. My guest is Mike Lane. I used to work as a Democratic counsel for the House Judiciary Committee, House Homeland Security Committee. Mike Lane worked to elect Republicans to office and to give them the intelligence they need as president of IntelliFence Strategies. So we don't agree on much except that we like to disagree agreeably. And you yourself are welcome to agree or disagree. The toll-free number is 877-528-8255. It can be on anything. In fact, we've discussed the war in Iraq, prescription health care benefits. You can talk about Karl Rove, if you like, or even one of the things that our listener, Michelle from California, wrote in on the blog about a guy in the National Guard who's been prohibited by his officer from telling the press what's going on there. He's not giving away true positions. He's just critical of the administration, and they are threatening to arrest him. In fact, as far as I know, he's actually being arrested right now. Any of these issues, it's all fair game. Let me go to Betsy from Annapolis. Betsy, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi there, Mark. I have a couple of quick comments.
Go ahead.
One is, as far as the Canadian health system goes, if you want to see any poll, the Canadians, the way they feel about their health system is 70, 80, 90% positive. Now, they're incredibly happy with their health system. Now, I can, you know, and I think we wouldn't get those numbers down here.
Betsy, let me interrupt you before you make your second point. It's a good one. Let me just address it to Mike. Mike, you have to agree. Maybe you don't, but I'll find out in a second, that more Canadians are happy with their system than Americans are happy with our system. Do you deny that?
I don't know the poll that Betsy is citing. I think that it's a matter of what you're accustomed to and what you're used to.
But they're happier overall than we are. I mean, Americans are pretty unhappy with our health system.
Because they don't know what a good health system really is.
I see. Americans don't know.
Health insurance, thank you very much.
That's right. They don't
have health insurance. 43 million Americans don't.
Right, and they pay dearly for it.
And they paid you, but apparently they're willing to pay for it. I mean, it seems to me, look, healthcare is one of those things that we can't help, right?
I mean,
you can't help if you have a genetic disease, some ways you can't help. If you smoke or whatever, I have no problem charging you higher healthcare. But most health problems, heart attack and so forth, shouldn't society work for insurance, group together, so that all Americans, and we're a fairly rich country, can have basic health care needs from rich to poor? I mean, are you against this basic concept?
No. In fact, I think most people strongly support the idea that all people ought to have access to the best medical care that we can get. The question is, how are we going to do it? I adamantly oppose, as you won't be surprised to hear, a government-sponsored scheme that's going to emulate the Canadian or the French model or something like that.
So how would you provide for the 43 million uninsured Americans?
Private sector solutions. The first thing you do is, first of all, the 43 million is not a static number, as you accused me before in the previous segment. There are people who lose jobs, between jobs, they go back into the job market all the time, and they're without health care for maybe anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months to even as much as 6 months. But it's not a static number. People are
Would it be nice if they could have portable health care, if the government protected their right to take their health care from one employer to another through their unemployment? That's a Democratic plan sponsored by Howard Dean.
You can take your health care with you right now. In fact, you can leave it.
Depends on your employer.
No. You can, unless you're one of those very, very, very small business exemptions, which I think is 5 employees or less now, you can pay the premiums for 18 months after you lose or after you leave a job. You can pay the premiums to your previous employer for 18 months and maintain that coverage. After those 18 months, you're allowed to take that particular plan with you and convert it to an individual plan, should you so choose. Most people choose to get coverage through their new employer.
But Mike, 43 million Americans are not insured. Do you or the Republicans have any plan for whether it's people who are uninsured for 6 months or uninsured for 10 years, do the Republicans have any plan to provide for those people? Or is the answer, if they have a heart attack or they have diabetes, they're out of luck?
No, first of all, they're not out of luck. That's disingenuous, Mark, because anybody who needs emergency medical care...
Well, insulin for diabetes, gets
emergency medical care. They get it. You show up at a hospital, the law says they take care of you, and they take care of you right then and there.
All depends on what the definition of emergency is, right? I mean, you might need kidney dialysis, and it won't kill you right away, but it'll kill you in 2 years. And you and I both know that emergency care is more expensive than regular preventative health care.
Yes, it is.
If the government were to provide this as a universal health care system, we would have cheaper health care costs because people wouldn't be going to the emergency room.
Well, and I'll take you one step further and give you some more ammunition to use. Not only is regular care, if I can call it that, less expensive than emergency care or urgent care, but preventive care is also less expensive than normal care.
Exactly.
And so the more we can do to create a medical marketplace where people will voluntarily bring themselves in for preventive care on a regular basis, I think the better off we are.
Wonderful. What's your plan?
But including that in insurance is not the best way to do it.
What's your plan? I gave you mine. Universal health care, Hillary care, all of that. That's my plan. That's a Democratic plan. What's your plan? What's the Republican plan?
The plan is to, number one, continue to grow the economy so that anybody who wants to work.
And let's and all will be well and everything will be fine.
Well, no.
And
there will always be some people who don't have coverage.
So
there will always be the
indigent.
No.
Okay, so I heard it.
Ultimately, no. After you will like this. After everybody who can get care through the private sector in one means or another has that care, either through dependent care or through having their own job and direct care or whatever it is, after everyone gets it, then yes, I'll grant you there needs to be a program that provides a certain level of medical care for those people who otherwise are just simply not going to get it.
Great. We agree on that. Is there a Republican plan on the table that does that? Can you name one? By anyone in Congress? Any Republican? I'm ready. Maybe one of my favorites, Chris Shays. What's the plan?
I don't think Chris has a plan. I don't know.
Is there anyone? You don't know.
I don't know.
Betsy, we're back to you. What do you think? Betsy,
hello?
You still there? Go ahead.
Yeah, isn't that the plan we already have? That everybody who can afford health care has it? And, you know, the rest of them are just, they can't afford it. We already have the Republican plan.
But, Betsy, what we're doing is we're creating competition among insurance companies. Yes, we are.
We're
competition.
We're creating big, giant play companies that can cherry-pick who they want.
I mean, there is a cherry-picking problem. I mean, people who have pre-existing health care conditions can't get insurance. You know that, Mike.
Yeah, it's mostly small, the cherry-picking problem, because 99% of plans, when you change jobs and you go in there, they accept you into that new plan.
Without
a pre-existing condition.
And my family and friends who've been cherry-picked out.
The second thing is you're entitled to keep the coverage that you have. Even when you develop a condition, you are allowed to keep the plan that you have.
Right, but you can't afford it anymore.
Well, that's true. We have an exploding health care cost. The cost of coverage, the cost of prescription. Everything is going on. We need more competition. We need more options. We need medical savings accounts. We need all kinds of options
medical
on the table.
Medical savings accounts, which help the people who don't need them.
It's consumer
choice. It's like retirement. It's like, let's give accounts to people who don't need them.
Consumer
Healthy
choice.
People should have money, and poor sick people are out of luck. Betsy, thank you for calling in and helping me put Mike on the spot. I appreciate it.
Mark, we need consumer choice.
We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after these messages.
Really need someone to make the coffee.
Ed Council.
from Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I want to thank all of you for calling. Your call, there's people still hanging on the line. The blogs on the computer, maybe we can show that up on the screen, are fast and furious talking about health care, which, you know, that, like I said, you can bring up whatever you want on the scoop. I've got a wonderful comment here, Dr. Ed from Kansas. This doctor from Kansas writes, by every measure of health care quality, the Canadian system is far superior to the fragmented for-profit system. Your guest, sorry Mike, Dr. Ed writes, is completely misinformed on this issue. The weights he describes do not exist except for some elective surgeries. He should check the facts before speaking, otherwise he shows a lack of concern and respect for the truth. Pretty harsh, Mike. Got a quick response?
Well, it is, yes. I have a niece whom I call Dr. Meg. She's 28 years old, and she just 3-4 years ago graduated from med school. She just finished her residency at Brown. She's doing one last year here in the United States before she and her husband-to-be go to Canada to practice medicine. And she's very apprehensive about it. She's looked into it. She studied the facts because it's going to impact her directly. And she's very apprehensive about practicing medicine in Canada because she says it's just a very, very difficult thing. You don't have the ability to have the relationship with your patients in Canada that you do here in the United States. And that's because of the rationing of health care in Canada.
That, you know, if that's true, I would question why it is that so many Canadians prefer their system over ours. I do want to go to one more issue, though, and we've only got a couple minutes left. But Michelle from California has raised the very interesting question of this man named Leonard Clark. And I admit I don't know all the facts, so I'm accepting what Michelle says is true. But Michelle's called in before, and she's usually got a pretty good handle on the facts. What she says is Leonard Clark is a National Guardsman in Arizona, from Arizona. He's now in Iraq. He's complaining about the conduct of the war. He's not saying where troops are or giving away battle positions or spies' names or anything, which I believe he could and should be censored on. But in fact, he's giving a political argument, and he even wants to run for the Senate. So he wants to talk to radio hosts across the country and bloggers, tell them the problem, and build a Senate campaign. His superior officer has insisted that he not talk to the press anymore, and he continued to do it, and Michelle says he's been arrested. In my view, that is a horrible mistreatment. It's freedom of speech. He should be allowed to criticize the conduct of the war if he wants to. Do you agree?
Well, first of all, thank you for admitting that neither of us really know all the facts in this, and we could probably talk more intelligently if we had a little bit of time to research
it. Assume the facts I said were true.
But assuming the facts are true, you can make a critical argument that he is acting contrary to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which has a requirement that you act at all times in the best interests of the United States Armed Forces and the uniformed services that you're a member of. You cannot act contrary to their interests. Criticizing the Army or criticizing the Navy is not something that is detrimental to the overall benefit of the services. But if you're carrying on in such a way at such an intensity that you're ruining the morale of your unit, that you are that you're creating a lack of unit cohesiveness and impacting readiness, then yes, it's certainly within the legal forays of them to do.
We only have 20 seconds left, but I got to say, for a president that is giving speech after speech with mission accomplished and all the troops behind him treating them as props, yeah, you're wonderful, Mr. President, giving speech for speech beforehand, if they agree with him, but if they disagree, they're in trouble, that's wrong. And that's it for today's Inside Scoop. But I do hope you will tune in all this week, because we've got a lot of interesting shows for you. Tomorrow, we're going to talk in detail about the London bombing and the strategies that we can use to stop terror. Then, of course, the next day, on Wednesday, got a great guest. His name is David Ray Griffin. He's a professor at Claremont College. He's the author of the book, The New Pearl Harbor, and it is his view that the neocons purposely got us into war, purposely, not only that, but had role in 9/11 to get us into war to achieve their purposes. I'm not sure that he's right, but I'm going to give him a chance to say his piece. And then on Thursday, got an expert from the book and documentary Bush's Brain to talk about Karl Rove. Is Karl Rove going to be indicted? We'll find out. Tune in to the Inside Scoop.